Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the burger-munching Elijah Herbal, is back in studio.
I didn't have time for lunch today, okay?
Dude, so your Tuesdays, you run, you sprint like you're Garrett Nelson to his locker from class to here.
That's my Monday, Wednesday I do.
Today, I see.
Today.
There's more time for drive through.
I had a semester project today.
Okay.
In which I had to get an interview done before this, so I went and filmed that all. And then how my class schedule goes is I go 9:30 to 1:45 on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Huh. And I had a little time in there.
So you had a little
done.
Time for just lunch for you.
Yeah, so I had to pick it up before the show. I swear I'll bring you a McDouble next time.
Dude, I'm a fat bastard. You need to do no such thing. I've been trying to work out a little bit. It hasn't worked. Got to lay off the alcohol is pretty much all there is to it once you hit 40. So, you know what? Pretty big day today for Nebraska football. It's more preparation for Wisconsin. That is wonderful. You know, the vibe I get, and just did a straw poll yesterday at Ameristar Sportsbook and Casino. Everybody was on the Niners. Didn't happen. And everybody is on Wisconsin. I was talking yesterday, I think Nebraska can maybe cover that number. I think Nebraska can play well enough to win. Where's evidence of that? Don't know. Haven't seen it. But it doesn't mean it can't be bottled and magically appear. That's what it would feel like. A team you haven't seen all season shows up Saturday ready to rock and roll. A guy that is the heart and soul of this football team. And I loved talking to the kid last year during signing day. Garrett Nelson, the pride of Scotts Bluff, is a dude who's gotten more snaps. He's a guy who's always on level 11 out of 10. And here's the thing, though. He's more than like a try-hard, feel-good story, okay? And I think folks are going to see him, and he can go one of two ways with it. You can say about damn time with a native Nebraskan that is a scholarship guy. It could have gone to Wisconsin, by the way, because they love those Garrett Nelson type players. I mean, doesn't he scream Wisconsin more than he does Nebraska in recent years?
Well, Wisconsin loved him was the thing. Was he committed to Nebraska without even going and seeing Wisconsin? Wisconsin had an official visit, I think, lined up with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he said, nah, the Huskers offered me. I'll stay here.
Sure.
Which is exactly what you want. I love that.
Well, he's no BS. He's no nonsense.
Yeah.
Good folks. Great community out in western Nebraska. And He's a wild man, and he's going to sell out for you every play, and you need more of that. So from a substance standpoint, he is what you need. You need 11 of him on defense, and you need 11 more of him behind the starters on defense. There's a little bit of symbolism today with Damian Jackson and Garrett Nelson getting black shirts. Because Damian's not really performed on the field, but he has performed for our country. So that trumps any TFL on third and two.
And I think people have overlooked that Damian Jackson got a black shirt today because he hasn't seen the field. He recorded his first couple tackles against Purdue, though. And he's a guy that has, despite not seeing the field, he has made every effort to get onto the field. He's a guy that started his career outside linebacker, I believe.
He's beefed up to 280 to play defensive end.
And then decided, well, my best chance to see the field is to go be a long snapper. So he learned how to long snap. Mm-hmm. Is now second on the depth chart. Is probably going to be our starting long snapper here after Chase Urbach moves on. So that's a guy that I think also embodies that black shirt mentality where he gives 100% off the field just so he can see the field and he can give 100% on the field. And I think that's another characteristic that guys that are playing at Nebraska need to have in these next years.
So we're kind of looking for attitude and effort moving forward. you'll need it because you take on the ultimate attitude and effort football team on Saturday with a monster identity and just a killer instinct. They love beating people up. We'll spend some time. Mitch Sherman's going to join us from The Athletic. Excited to get caught up with Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet. Everywhere Rick goes, it's a monumental win for the home program. Keep that in mind. And it started as a monumental road win for Indiana about a month ago. Then Rick found his way to Illinois, and Lovey beat Wisconsin. Next week, Rick's in Minnesota for crowd surfing and Minnesota's awesome scene with everybody in maroon on the field. And there's P.J. Fleck rowing his boat, duct tape and all, with those oars. Great skill, people, but his lines of scrimmage stood up to Penn State's defensive front seven. So, if you see Rick, pat him on the back, say thank you for coming Saturday to do sidelines for BTN. Because where Rick is gone, big wins have followed by an underdog team. Just how it's worked. So maybe the stars align Saturday. If it doesn't, don't blame Pizzo. That's what I'm saying. So Rick Pizzo's with us in an hour, and then we get to sit down with the Godfather. Incredible Husker, phenomenal head coach, College Football Hall of Famer, former member of the College Football Playoff Committee, Barry Alvarez with us at 525. Can join us today, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Give us a follow on Twitter, Chris Schmidt at Schmidt underscore radio. That's me, Elijah Herbal at Herbal Essences on Twitter is where you find Elijah, and email. Can do so, Chris at HaleVarsity.com. I have one simple question today we can talk about. And it's really the heart of the matter. We can hear about Wisconsin, and you have watched Wisconsin. We'll also kind of get into the playoff selection committee in about 30 minutes. You know, who is number two and who is number four this week? What kind of jockeying happens? We'll spend some time on the Niners and Seattle last night. Great Monday night ball game. Neither team wanted to win it, but it was still pretty high drama. Phenomenal defense. That's why you draft Jadeveon Clowney number one, because he can have 12 hurries, a strip sack, and a fumble recovery for a touchdown. Listen, the Niners' line's not bad, and Clowney went off. He went Sue last night. But let's start off here with Garrett Nelson, cut 15. And Nelson was in front of the camera. He was in front of the media today. And the guy just, I've heard a story before of a guy losing it emotionally when he got his black shirt. Coach McBride told us this story, and Pat Engelbert also told this story of when he finally got it. Engelbert's a Nebraska kid, middle guard, tough as nails, in that John Perella mold. Guys that really kind of helped set the foundation for Nebraska football before the 93 season. And Engelbert's story that sticks with me, this is back in 07. And it was, I got the shirt, I shut the stall, and I just wept. He just wept. And emotion overcame Garrett Nelson today.
Felt pretty good.
You're good.
Felt pretty good. It means a lot to me. I'm working hard, so it just means a lot. Felt good.
So that is what was on Twitter, Brian Rosenthal, getting that one-on-one clip. More of kind of a pool session with Garrett Nelson with lots of different media. Some good stuff from Derek Peterson. You got to read on Garrett Nelson and Damian Jackson, HaleVarsity.com. So, listen, this is symbolic. You have Damian Jackson, you have Garrett Nelson that do it the right way. They are guys that are going to sell out for the guy next to them, the team, and that needs to be transfused into everybody on this football team. And that's what Scott Frost has been been telling us for the last two seasons. And you have a statement today with this where Garrett Nelson is, A, as he'll tell you in a minute, he's got to pay rent. He's got to bring it every day. This is not the end. This is just the beginning of something he's been working for. But in all honesty, he is going to be not just your vocal leader. He's already been vocal. Him and Wandale Robinson have been vocal. And they're only 18, and they're only true freshmen. But there's a certain standard about how they go about their business that will translate into wins. There is talent, there is athleticism, so it's not just talking. Their actions will back it up. And that is what is most important, because you need everybody selling out and playing as hard as they can, doing the best they can every play, every game. That's what needs to return to Nebraska. That's what you get in Wisconsin. It's what comes to Lincoln, or you go visit in Madison once a year, every year during football season. And it's Barry Alvarez that'll tell you about it here in an hour. It's the Devaney and Nebraska way. And it's been successful for decades at Wisconsin, like it was successful in Lincoln for decades. But Nebraska's gotten away from it. They're trying to get back to it. Guys like Garrett Nelson, on and off the field, are going to make that a reality if he has anything to say about it. So it's symbolic today. Can that symbolism transform into performance on the field? Can it inspire some of his mates defensively to finally say, bro, we've had enough of getting curb stomped? That's what it comes down to me on Saturday. Will Nebraska play well enough to win? Will Nebraska play ticked off? Will Nebraska play angry? Will Nebraska respond physically and emotionally on Saturday to Wisconsin when they start getting bullied? They're going to get bullied Saturday. They're going to get bullied on Black Friday. Have they finally had enough in November? Are they going to punch back? Are they going to take punches? That's what these, and then who the hell knows with Maryland? We'll worry about that next week. But I'm just curious, man. What are you going to get out of this Nebraska football team? What are you going to get out of some of your seniors? What are you going to get out of some of your other big-time playmakers? What are you going to get out of your lines of scrimmage? I mean, think about it. You've gotten into a fight before during your younger years. Maybe some of you get in a bar fight every Saturday. I don't know. More power to you if you're not hurting somebody. You know, like long term. It's between buddies who had one too many Bush lattes. There's a point in time where you lose it and you've had enough. And is Nebraska going to keep getting pushed around and mocked and stepped on in the West? Does it finally kind of halt on Saturday? You may not win, but you can fight like hell. So that's what I want to see Saturday. What do you get from Nebraska? Do you get a team that is tired of it? And Coach Frost touched on it Monday. More on Nebraska and Garrett Nelson here. Let's do cut two. Why he thinks he got the black shirt.
In my mind, there really isn't no outstanding reason. In my mind, it's just kind of the norm that should be here every day, coming to work and being excited about what you're doing and being excited being around each other and flying to the ball. And, I mean, this shirt doesn't represent perfection. It represents attention to detail and giving 100% every play. I mean, yeah, black shirts mess up all the time, but it's not like they disregarded the mistake. They fixed it and it got better, and it's working hard every day, one and every day.
That is straight from the black shirt's mouth there. Garrett Nelson, Damian Jackson. Here's Coach Chinander. We'll hear more from Chin on Wisconsin, but his reaction to Garrett Nelson.
Obviously, Garrett's done a good job and getting on the field a lot more, and being a black shirt's about more than just performing on Saturday. And I think Coach Frost and the staff felt like those guys were deserving. They do things the right way on the practice field, off the field, on game day, taking over a little bit of a leadership role, so those guys were deserving of one.
Okay, Nebraska's coming off a bye week. You need something good. You need some inspiration. Maybe this is more button pushing, but also a deserved reward. All right, it isn't Halloween, and it's not trick or treat where you're handing it out to everybody. This is important. Let's see if it spurs on an inspired performance. Maybe that's where Nebraska's at. Maybe they're practicing okay, but there's this real thing that is coming to town, and it's Wisconsin, and nobody's got great memories. Don't know how many guys are left on that overtime loss team in 2016. Probably not many. The last time Nebraska played Wisconsin well, you could take some okay things from last year, what you did offensively, but it was 20-10, and then it wasn't. Then Jonathan Taylor got loose. We'll spend some time on Nebraska, Wisconsin. More thoughts on the two new black shirts as Mitch Sherman going to be with us. We're an hour away from the Godfather. Barry Alvarez going to be with us. Great to be with you on a Tuesday. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, Tail Varsity Radio, and we're presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Tail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Barry Alvarez coming up in 1 hour. We say hi to Mitch Sherman from The Athletic. At Mitch Sherman is where you find him. You read him on Twitter. Mitch, what do you know? How are you, man?
I'm good, Chris. How are you?
We're good, man. And, you know, let's start off, and you've been busy. I want to kind of get into what you've been up to shortly, but your reaction here to the two new black shirts, the scene with Garrett Nelson and, of course, Damian Jackson today. What stuck out to you about these two this late in the year getting the vaunted black shirt hanging in their locker?
Yeah, Garrett Nelson was not, I guess, all that surprising. With Damian Jackson, you know, I think that has a lot more to do with the example that he sets for teammates in life and really all over the place, in the locker room, in the way that he goes about his business. I'm sure it was extra significant to honor him this week on Veterans Day. Mm-hmm. He is, of course, an ex-Navy SEAL, quite a bit older than the rest of his teammates, and not a guy who's out there playing on Saturday on the D-line, but I think he's every bit as significant to his teammates as the guys who are. So that's a little bit different than what you normally see with a black shirt, but every bit, if not more, well-deserved. Opposite end of the spectrum a little bit with Garrett Nelson as far as his age, a true freshman, of course, and a guy like Damian Jackson, but from a totally different place, who is setting an example for the way that players on this team are expected to work. It was interesting to hear from Javon DeWitt, his position coach, Garrett's position coach today, and talking about why Garrett warms up on Saturdays with the defensive linemen instead of the outside linebackers or the linebackers in general. And it's just that he needs that little bit of extra juice that those 290 and 350-pound guys can give him to get ready. I mean, he's more than ready to hit somebody when Saturday comes around. So instead of sticking him with the linebackers during warmups, they put him with the big boys, and he, you know, holds his own just fine. So that, you know, I think that tells you a lot about Garrett. There's a lot more to tell. I wrote a story about him a couple of weeks ago from having gone out to Scotts Bluff and Gehring. He went to Scotts Bluff High School, grew up in Gehring. You know, they're twin cities out there in the panhandle. And you know, Garrett is, I think everyone believes, someone who is a future captain in this program. And when he figures things out entirely as far as where he's supposed to be at each minute, each second on the field as a defender, he's going to be a force. He's going to be somebody who Nebraska can build its defense around. So it will be fun to watch him to continue to grow, and he'll do it from here on out, I would expect, with that black jersey on in practice.
You know, you mentioned Nelson and Jackson on and off the field. They're impressive. You have an older member of the Nebraska football team. You have a young pup, but you have a vocal pup, and same with Wandale Robinson. I mean, the guy's producing, he's vocal, but those are kind of your pace setters for the program moving forward. You need to clone those two guys, all three of them, and put them and surround them, and then get too deep of them when it comes to potential and talent, and also attitude and effort. And do you think this award was, I don't want to say, and staged isn't the right, staged is, and I'm not meaning disrespect by saying that. I'm saying the timing, I guess, is the better word. Timing of it, do you think it's maybe going to give a little extra juice here for a Wisconsin, or should you need it?
I think there's a message that's being sent, not necessarily about Wisconsin, but just about where Nebraska wants to go as a program in general. And you would think that everyone in that locker room had figured it out by now. I think most guys have, mm-hmm. but it's not coming out the way that this coaching staff and this team hoped that it would when they're on the field on Saturday. I think the coaches are a little bit befuddled right now and have been for a good chunk of this season by what they see in practice versus what they see on the field Saturday. And again, in talking to DeWitt today, he said, to paraphrase him, I know it sounds strange at this point to continue to say that these guys are stepping it up another notch in practice, but that's the way it is. And so these coaches are self-aware. They understand that, you know, how people perceive their words, and that I think some of the fans have grown tired. Maybe some of the media have grown tired of hearing about how they're killing it in practice every week. This was the best Monday. You know, this was the best Tuesday or Wednesday. The coaches, you know, I don't think they would continue to say that kind of stuff with the way the team has played each week if they didn't really believe that the team was making big strides in practice. And that may be one of the bigger takeaways, one of the bigger positives from this entire season, is how far Nebraska came on the practice field in comparison to a year ago. And that leads to some belief, some confidence on the inside, maybe not on the outside, but some confidence on the inside that Saturday will catch up, that they're not always going to be a team that, you know, wins Monday through Friday. They, you know, that this is where it has to start. And whatever the hurdles are that are causing this team not to play the way that it practices, you would rather be in the position to get over that than trying to get to a place where, you know, you have a huge hill to climb Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I think they'll take something from this year in knowing that they became a much better team in practice. You know, those guys like Garrett Nelson and Damian Jackson are some of the leaders in that area.
Mitch Sherman's with us from The Athletic, Hail Varsity Radio, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter's where you follow him. That makes sense to me, though, where, I mean, it does all start with practice, and once you get that down, everybody on the same page, and then maybe it can translate to Saturdays. I want to get your thoughts on your sit down with Tommy Frazier in just a second. I got about 5 minutes, but a real quick thought here on Saturday. Do you have a gut on how Nebraska comes out? Do you think they'll compete Saturday, or do you think it's just too much Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to come out to compete. I really do, and then we'll see what happens if you know, when adversity strikes, because it's going to happen. Jonathan Taylor's going to make a move and, you know, break a run You know, Wisconsin's too good. There's too many weapons on offense and that defense. I mean, I think people, it's not as fresh in people's mind how well Wisconsin played in the first half of this season defensively in shutting out four of its first six opponents. You know, Ohio State definitely got the better of that defense, but that's far from what Nebraska is going to put out there on the field this week, just in terms of talent and confidence and readiness to go against a defense like that. So, my feeling is that Nebraska is going to have to respond at a different kind of level than it has all year, considering the competition, to stay in this game for four quarters. That they're going to come out to fight. They're going to come out with an attitude to compete. I think they feel refreshed after the bye week. You know, we'll see on all of the where they're at as far as everybody being healthy. That's a key component to the way that this game takes shape too. And then when Wisconsin hits them, you know, what's going to happen? Is this going to be a team that kind of that steps back and shows some of the characteristics that we saw at Purdue, at Minnesota? Or are they going to stand up and fight right back against the Badgers? You know, eventually, of course, that is the program that Nebraska needs to have. It needs to have that kind of program right now. Eventually, I think everyone inside remains confident that's the kind of program Nebraska will be. I haven't seen enough, not even close to enough, from this team to make me think they can do that on Saturday against Wisconsin. But, you know, someday they're going to turn the corner, and we just don't – maybe it'll be this week.
Mitch, you sat down with Tommy Frazier. What was that like?
I enjoyed talking to Tommy. Have a good relationship with him. And I had seen, I think a lot of people had seen, some of the comments that he made, particularly on that Saturday when Nebraska was at Purdue. You can take them you can and probably should take them as him being critical of some elements in the program, the play calling at times he was critical of in that game. He outright questioned Scott Frost in that game. And you know, one of the things that I took away from it, I wanted to give Tommy an opportunity to have a little bit more context to his comments than just what people see on social media. And, you know, a takeaway from him in sitting down with him early last week is that, you know, he has a great love for Nebraska football. And that has not waned in the years since Scott Frost took over, the 2 years. It hasn't waned in the 25 years or 24 years since he left the program. You know, I think he says he's going to support Nebraska no matter what, no matter who the coach is, through thick and thin. And he, in his mind, is just like a guy sitting on a couch with a beer in his hand, critiquing the game like, you know, your cousin might.
Your fan, right?
Or whatever, right, like your neighbor might do. But that is not how people perceive Tommy Frazier. His words are always going to carry weight. And he understands that, but the thing with Tommy, and if you knew him when he played, if you knew him, you know, in his early years as an ex-Husker, and it holds true today as a 45-year-old, you know, he's not going to back down from with what he in saying what he thinks because it might hurt somebody's feelings. And I think a lot of the things that he says are the same things that other people are thinking and may not want to say. Sure, a lot of average fans say it on social media and say much worse, but much more critical, but they're not Tommy Frazier. And people aren't looking at their words in the same way they do arguably the greatest, the words that come from arguably the greatest player in the history of the program. So that's him. That's who he is. And that's part of the reason that he was as great as he was as a player, was because he was never afraid to hurt somebody's feelings. But he does still care a lot for Nebraska and wants to see Nebraska win and wants to see Scott Frost succeed. So I was glad to be able to give him the opportunity to say some of that.
Mitch, really enjoyed the read there, and keep up the amazing work. Thanks for a few minutes today.
All right. Good to talk to you, Chris. Thanks.
Chime in 402 402- 888-346-ESPN or email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
That was awesome from Mitch. That'll get posted on ESPN, Lincoln.com, on demand. Good stuff on Tommy Frazier's thoughts on the program. Good stuff. And Mitch always has the words, and timing is something that I think is very important with the Black Shirts announcement today with Damian Jackson and Garrett Nelson, and I think Mitch put that perfectly with his take on things, and we'll have some of that SoundCloud up on link on ESPN's Twitter, at ESPN Lincoln's Twitter feed. The SoundCloud will be up. So coming up, we'll talk to Rick Pizzo. He was in Minneapolis. He was in Illinois. He's been to Lincoln. He's coming back to Lincoln this weekend, part of the BTN crew with Kevin Kugler, Matt Millen. He's doing sidelines. Pizzo's been pretty good where he's been. Big wins have happened. About an hour away from our thoughts on the college football playoff ranking. We'll get there. We'll hear from a little Ed Orgeron. He is probably going to jump to number one, but LSU has a really cool win, three of them. Are they better than Ohio State? And who sneaks into number four? We'll tackle that. Some more thoughts here from Nebraska. Let's hear from Coach DeWitt. And Mitch was touching on it. Last thought here on Garrett Nelson, the black shirt. And this is pretty cool.
Garrett Nelson got a black shirt, and I'm sure he was fired up as could be. I didn't get to see it in the locker room when he picked it up, but I wish I could have. I would have been really excited. Have you ever watched Garrett practice? Have you ever watched Garrett prepare for a game? Have you ever watched Garrett run out on the field pregame? Have you ever seen Garrett do anything he's not supposed to do consistently? Garrett does things right off and on the field, and that's what's given Garrett an opportunity to get a black shirt. He's gonna, I mean, that's why his snaps have gone up game to game to game.
Boom. There you go. Need more guys like that. So let's spend a minute or two here on last night's NFL. Seattle and San Francisco. I thought San Fran would win. I thought Seattle would cover. So it worked out because Seattle covered. And I looked at the Seahawks, and that game was crazy. That game was fun. That game also had an element of sloppiness, and it was because both defenses were making life miserable on the opposing offense. And what can you say about Russell Wilson? He's driving him down in overtime, and what happens? He throws a pick in the red zone, and I'm watching it. I'm in bed. I'm trying to get crashed out for KFOR in the morning, and Junior's losing his mind. He's losing his mind. Hasn't quite gotten to the point where he's breaking things or swearing like his grandfather. But he's losing his mind. He's got both freaking dogs dressed up in jerseys. We got to have a talk about that. Seriously, the German Shepherd's got a Russell jersey on, and the fat Labradoodle's got a Cam Chancellor jersey on. And they both think they're in trouble because they're just, what'd the boy put on me?
Yeah, what have I done to deserve this punishment?
Yeah, why am I wearing this? So they're both just bouncing around in Seattle gear. I went home to a crazy house. And it was a pretty good ball game. And Jimmy Garoppolo should have been picked like 37 times last night. You have Clowney's performance that's pretty memorable and impressive. San Fran, though, they're just a different animal, as you would expect, without Kittle. And without Emmanuel Sanders. They just are. Sanders went out in the first half. And you have Debo, the guy, not the guy from Friday, but the other Debo.
Debo Samuel?
Yeah. He was good, but he also had some drops. Okay, and there wasn't really anyone to go to. San Fran got downhill running the football from time to time. And I still think San Francisco is a good football team. I can't quite figure out Seattle. As to them being 7-2, they're impressive. But I think what really says the most to me about Seattle and their win against San Francisco, I kind of pay it forward to Baltimore now. Because Baltimore went in there and won 30-13 a few weeks back into Seattle. And I think right now this isn't permanent, but it's in pencil about Baltimore being the team to beat in the NFL because you have Lamar Jackson playing out of his mind. And he's been efficient throwing the football, but he's been incredible running the ball. He has stayed healthy. They have got a good run offense with Mark Ingram. And they play salty defense. They play good enough defense. I think New England will come around. Kansas City's looking good. I know they just lost in a game that it was just a mess on special teams, be it Blues Kalooz with the blocked field goal, but the misstep with the snap back to the punter that set things off for Kansas City. Kansas City can't win in a walk-off against a really good team in Minnesota, and then the next week go lose in Nashville. That's how the NFL works. Mm-hmm. I mean, San Diego, check that, swear jar. The Rams crushed Green Bay out of nowhere. The Falcons killed New Orleans this Sunday. That wasn't supposed to happen. So the NFL's just it's good every Sunday. Everybody has a chance to beat somebody. The parity is very real. It's been that way. But I think right now you've got some separators here. Lamar Jackson and, of course, Russell Wilson. Those are your two separators right now.
Those are the two MVP candidates in the league.
And then you have Tom Brady and that New England defense. I mean, they're your and then four here, the fourth storyline is what Kansas City is with Mahomes back. They were still a playoff team without him. They are a Super Bowl champ with him. And there you go. And I know you're frowning at me because you're a Donkey fan and I'm talking Chiefs here. But those are the four storylines right now. What Russell Wilson does from an accuracy standpoint, what Seattle can do with the run game, what Seattle does defensively with Clowney. You have Baltimore. And you've got four really, really awesome football teams right now in the NFL. Three of them are in the AFC.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're also leaving out the 49ers, the team we lost last night.
I know.
Put in a really good performance, and without one of the worst kicks I've ever seen in my lifetime.
But the guy just drilled three in a row to get him there.
If he can convert that one, which you honestly expect him to convert, the 49ers win last night, and they're still undefeated.
I know. And I'm not – listen, I just – I'm sorry. Jimmy G's not in that conversation to go win me a football game like Russell did after throwing the pick. He's not in that conversation like Lamar, and he's not in that conversation like Brady, and he's sure as hell in that conversation like Mahomes.
My problem with those two teams, the NFC, is that they both have a fatal flaw. With the Seahawks, if they can't get a pass rush, people can throw over on them all day, and their games turn into a shootout. Mm-hmm. With the 49ers...
At least, but they can answer in the shootout, though, don't you think?
They can. With the 49ers, if you can't... if you can stop their running game, and you force Jimmy G to be a true quarterback and you make them have weapons in the passing game, you can really shut them down. You look at the Ravens and the Patriots, and it's different.
Okay,
those teams I don't think have fatal flaws.
Let me ask you this, and this is that guy. I'm going to question somebody's schedule. Tampa, Cincy, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, the Rams, the Skins, the Panthers, the Cards. Who's their most impressive win?
Panthers.
And now back to Hail Varsity Radio.
10 minutes away, Rick Pizzo's with us at 5:25. Barry Alvarez will talk Nebraska, Wisconsin with the Husker and College Football Hall of Famer, the AD at Wisconsin, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. We'll get you qualified here for Nebraska, Wisconsin tickets and the longest drive. We are back at the Graduate Friday. Should be an awesome time to be indoors, swinging away, having a beer at the Top Golf Simulators. Me and Jay Moore are going to be on the road Friday, 4 to 6 at the Graduate, 9th and P. So we'll get you qualified shortly for Nebraska-Wisconsin tickets and get you signed up for the longest drive participation. Reminder to buckle up. Do you want the seatbelt or the windshield to stop your forward motion? Seatbelts prevent excessive injury when your vehicle and body need to slow down. That applies to the driver's seat, passenger seat, or back seat. Buckle up now. Click it or ticket. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. Last thought here on Seattle and San Francisco. The Niners are at 8-1. I think Bosa and their D-line's good. I think their defense is phenomenal. That's what kept them in it last night. That said, they are 8-1. What's the through nine games, yes, you'll take it. They were the last unbeaten. I laid out who they beat, who they've played. Not their fault. It is what it is. But here's how they close. I mean, they've got to go. They've got to host the Cardinals, right? And they should win that, but who knows?
They beat them once. And it was close. That's
I know.
The thing.
Well,
close.
with Murray and this air raid, it's not fun on defenses. But they still host Green Bay. They still have to go to Baltimore. They still have to go to New Orleans. They still have to go to Seattle, and that's assuming the Rams get their stuff together. They still have the Rams and Goff. The Rams right now are their best win. So is San Fran one of these teams that starts 8-1 and then holds on for dear life to go 9-7, 10-6? That's my question.
It's a possibility.
Because their quarterback play, Jimmy's not awful, but he ain't Lamar. He's still got to go head-to-head with Lamar. He still has to go head-to-head with Rodgers, and he still has to play Russell again.
All that matters, though, is making the playoffs.
Well, if I'm San Francisco and I start 8-1, I sure as hell want home field.
Yeah, you want home field, but
in that division, good luck. It's insane.
I mean, losing to the Seahawks in that game last night is big.
Sure,
that's big.
You can split with them, but I wouldn't put any money that you're going to Seattle last game of the regular season.
Yeah, how big is that game going to be?
Well, it depends.
It does depend.
It might be. I mean,
look at it's what 7-2 and 8-1 right now. Those mm-hmm. teams, it's possible. I'd even say likely those teams could be fighting for the division.
You've got a head to head lead right now, and if you're Seattle with the division lead within the division. Mm-hmm. Now I know they look at overall record as part of this thing too. Okay, we'll take callers 1 through 6. Yeah. Elijah's like, God darn it. Callers 1 through 6 right now. You qualify for Nebraska, Wisconsin tickets. We'll give those away Friday at the Graduate and the Longest Drive. Callers 1 through 6, get in here. We'll get your name down and your chance at Nebraska, Wisconsin tickets and be a part of the Longest Drive at the Graduate on Friday. Callers 1 through 6. Right now, we get you signed up at 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Elijah's going to grab you, put you on hold, get your name down. 1 through 6 now qualify. Nebraska, Wisconsin tickets, the Longest Drive Friday at the Graduate. 1 through 6, 466-3776.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, kick it off hour two at Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. The Godfather, Barry Alvarez, coming up. We say hi to Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet time. Rick, wherever you go, the masses invade the field. How are you?
Yeah, it's been a pretty crazy year. Sidelines for the Wisconsin-Illinois game. Obviously, I was in Lincoln for the Indiana-Nebraska game, which was terrific this past weekend in Minneapolis. For Penn State, Minnesota, man, I got to tell you right now, I think it's really good for college football to see what Minnesota is doing. Anyone that thinks that this is just a team that's gotten there based on schedule and that PJ Fleck is more about style than substance, you're just not paying attention. This is a really good football team, especially at skill positions, and I was remarkably impressed by what I saw Saturday.
Fleck proved to me that he can develop and coach and, above all, motivate. He rubs a lot of Nebraska fans wrong. I have rolled my eyes at him, but I've also enjoyed the sit-down with him at Media Days because he's super insightful. I do like his energy, and he has good ball players, but he's made his lines of scrimmage very good, and he's got them believing. They're playing. I don't know if they're punching above their weight. I don't know how many times out of 10 they beat Penn State, but the point is they beat Penn State Saturday, and they made plays. What was that scene like to be a part of?
Well, and I got to tell you, Chris, too, the other thing is whether people believe it's real, genuine, whatever, that's not important. The players believe it,
right.
And that's all that matters. And you could absolutely see that inside that locker room. The scene was crazy. I actually just finished an interview with wide receiver Rashad Bateman. It went for 203 and a touchdown against Penn State, you know, one of the best wide receivers in the country. He said it has been insane this week in Minneapolis, and that I think the big challenge for them, right, is you get to enjoy that win, but then you got to turn your attention right away to a tough game in Iowa City, and you have all these fans still wanting to talk about the Penn State game. So that's their biggest challenge this week, is to kind of put that game in the rear view and focus on a game which, if they lose, could basically mean the end of everything that they've built it up through 9 straight wins.
That's tough duty. That is so tough to go to Iowa City, because Iowa's perennial 9 win or more, or
yep,
around that 7-8. They don't deviate from that much. I know they just left it all out in Madison, so it's not a great time to maybe catch Iowa. Maybe it's a perfect time to catch Iowa. I haven't made my mind up yet about that, but Minnesota will need to be able to handle success. And you talk to coaches, and I know you do, it's great we got the big win, but we got to get the next win.
That's exactly right. And it is amazing how focused that Minnesota team is. Rashad Bateman did not want to talk much about Penn State. He really wanted to talk more about what's coming up with Iowa, because they've put Penn State in the past now, and that's PJ Fleck's thing every week. It's a 1-0 season, and they're buying in. And I do think the one thing that needs to be pointed out, though, is too many folks are like, wow, you use the phrase punching above their weight. Others are saying, well, they've only done it because of their schedule. If you match up their skill players with anybody else in this conference, I think the only team that they fall behind is Ohio State. From a skill perspective, Tanner Morgan doesn't look flashy. He's one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the country. Chris, he was 18 of 20 against Penn State. It was not his most accurate day of the year, because he set the Big Ten single game completion percentage record earlier in the year when he went 21 of 22. Doesn't make mistakes. They have Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks, and Mohammed Ibrahim, guys who would be starters on basically every team in the Big Ten, with maybe the exception of J.K. Dobbins at Ohio State and Jonathan Taylor at Wisconsin. I think their wide receiving core is maybe the best in the country. Antoine Winfield is a Thorpe Award guy who is tied for the nation's lead in interceptions. They have skill, and people, for some reason, completely look past it. No one's looking past it anymore, not after what they did at Penn State.
Their skill guys, that was the rap on them, was they've got amazing skill. I didn't think Morgan could throw well enough to win, and the guy was incredible. I mean, he was flat out fantastic, and I think Penn State's defense is dynamite. I think they're super talented. I'm way off. It was way wrong on. I thought Minnesota'd cover. I didn't think they'd win, and they dominated most of that game. They were up by double digits most of the game.
Yeah, they also did a better job on the offensive line than I thought they would do. I thought that was going to be Penn State's saving grace defensively, because Penn State's really good in their front seven. They're average in their back four. When you're average in the back four against a wide receiving core like that, you need your front seven to get pressure on the quarterback and make him uncomfortable. Once Penn State was unable to do that, you just had a sense that Minnesota was going to be able to throw the ball all over the yard. That's exactly what they did.
We'll get to Nebraska, Wisconsin, the game you're a part of. Rick Pizzo with us, Big Ten Buffet, Hail Varsity Radio, at BT and Rick Pizzo. That's where you find him on Twitter. Illinois and Minnesota both, and this has been the conversation in Lincoln. When does it flip for Coach Frost? Tough season so far for Nebraska, but you saw Fleck do things. They popped now in year three. Lovey, they'll be bowling, and what they've been able to do, they close lost to Nebraska right there against Michigan, and then finished against Wisconsin. What are you more surprised by, what Minnesota's doing or what Illinois has done?
I think what Illinois has done over the past month, because I got to watch Minnesota a couple times early in the year, and I was higher on the Gophers earlier than most people. Illinois, after they lost to Eastern Michigan and basically gave the game away against Nebraska at home, I thought it was, here we go again for Lovie Smith, and this team was basically going to mail it in. And then they showed something against Michigan in that loss at a great second half. Lovie told us before the Wisconsin game, don't be shocked if something crazy happens. He saw it coming. Now, the Michigan State game, I think you blame Michigan State as much as you praise Illinois for the way that went down, but still, Illinois leads the country in takeaways. It's not even close as far as forced fumbles is concerned. And Lovey's kind of taken the formula that he had success with at the NFL level and applying it to college. You know, this defense is giving up yardage. They're giving up chunk plays, but then they take the ball away and they get it back to the offense, and the offense is just good enough and can make just enough plays. They wait long enough for Brandon Peters to get hot or for Reggie Corbin to bust a big run. It's been a fascinating story. I never envisioned, after what I saw in that Eastern Michigan and Nebraska games, that this team would have a chance to be part of the postseason. Now they have a legitimate chance to win 7-8 games and get to the postseason. An amazing job by that staff and that team for sticking together.
You know, the thing about Illinois, they've been this under Lovey. They've had good guys on the front seven. They've been physical in the back end. They are just an amazingly physical defense. They just beat the heck out of people. And their O-line is really underrated. They've got two really talented backs, but their O-line moves people. So I think Lovey's put together some pretty decent talent.
Yeah, and you got to remember, they've been playing without a lot of injured guys, too. I mean, playing without Wole Batiku, playing without Ricky Smalling. They played the last game without Jake Hansen. Sidney Brown's missed time. I mean, they've had key members of this team banged up throughout the course of the year. It's been next man up. I mean, they deserve all the credit that they're getting right now. And I'm really happy for Lovey and these guys who have been through so many bad times that they know already that they're going bowling in 2019.
Rick Pizzo's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Big Ten Network. You'll be on the sidelines, Nebraska, Wisconsin. Rick, what do you see with Wisconsin? What do you see with Nebraska Saturday?
Well, if you've watched Wisconsin for the last 15 years, you know what to expect.
I know what's coming.
On Saturday, I mean, they are going to run the football with Jonathan Taylor, and they're going to ask you to try and stop it. Iowa knew what was coming last week, and Jonathan Taylor ran for 250 yards. Nebraska knows what's coming this week. The question is, can you stop it? I think what's concerning for me with Nebraska is that the corners, I don't feel, are good enough right now to play man coverage. You have to decide what you're going to do defensively. And if you are going to decide that Jonathan Taylor is not going to beat you, then you're going to sneak a safety up. You're going to keep all the linebackers in the box. And what Wisconsin will do then is that they will run slant after slant. That's how they crushed Michigan. That's how they crushed Michigan State. Danny Davis, A.J. Taylor, terrific on those slant routes. And then when you start to bite on the slant routes, you have Quintez Cephas, who can take you deep, and Jake Ferguson, who's a mismatch nightmare at tight end. I think it's a really bad matchup schematically for Nebraska. And we saw last year, this game in Madison, I know two different teams, but let's be honest, this Nebraska team this year is looking a lot more like the team that we saw last year than we expected. And Wisconsin's not a lot different either. They're built the same way. So unless there are some answers for Nebraska up front and that defensive front four that we didn't see a year ago, then I think this could be a pretty long day, because it's going to be Jonathan Taylor, and a little bit more of Jonathan Taylor.
So basically you're asking how you want to die.
It's exactly what you're doing. And, you know, folks will say, but then how did Illinois shut down Jonathan Taylor? Well, they did sneak a guy in the box. And Illinois' corners are bigger and more physical, and they banged up that Wisconsin wide receiving core, and they also got pressure on Jack Cohn, made him really uncomfortable through a couple of bad picks. Can Nebraska do that against this Wisconsin offensive line? I just don't know, Chris, because I haven't really seen him do it all year. So I'm not sure why they're going to start doing it on November the 16th.
Fair point. Very fair point about pressure and man coverage. And you're nine games in, you are what you are. I'm wondering if Nebraska sticks a couple of other guys down. Maybe you go bear defense, and I'm just pulling it out of the air. I mean, adjust, because what's been happening, you've not been able to stop people running the football. So,
and I think this is the time, Chris, that if you're Eric Chenander, you know, and I look forward to coming in to speak with the coaches on Friday and hear what the DC has to say, is this one of those times where you just say, listen, what we did last year didn't work. What we've been doing a lot this year right now isn't working. I'm going to mix it up. I'm going to throw, you know, you don't want to put too much stuff on guys at this point in the year. I mean, you got to stick with what got you there, but there's always going to be a wrinkle or two. I mean, if there's a time to throw a wrinkle or two in there, especially if you have a run defense wrinkle, now would be the time, right, against an offensive line like this and a running back like this. So why not? At this point, what do you really have to lose by trying something a little bit different?
Two names that I'm interested to see what type of snap count they get on the defensive line for Nebraska. We know about Darian Daniels, the senior grad transfer. He's been good. His little brother, I remember, against Iowa came in and gave quite a few snaps. Iowa stopped running the ball in that fourth quarter with Damian in there. Can he give Nebraska some snaps? He's not been giving Nebraska a ton of snaps this season. And Jakeem Green, JUCO transfer that was an SEC dude. You have four games to play with him now and not lose a red shirt. So do you get two bigger bodies and throw them in the middle along with Darian and let one of the Davis twins go off? I don't know. I'm clutching at straws, but
I think the question that you're asking is really fair, because you have to remember, when you get to the defensive line and you're playing an O-line like Wisconsin, it's really important to have talent. It's really important to have strength, but neither one of those are as important as having depth, because pass rushing is one thing. The offensive lineman is backing up. They're putting their hands up on your shoulders. That's one thing. If they're continually coming downhill and driving you the way that Wisconsin's O-line drives you, and they run the football 40 times, you are exhausted playing that many snaps. You need depth. If you're only rotating in, let's say, six guys on that D-line, by the third and fourth quarter, they're going to grind you into a pulp. If you can rotate in seven, maybe eight guys that can play significant snaps, that makes all the difference in the world. If you don't have depth on the D-line when you play against the Wisconsin offensive line, those guys are licking their lips, and Jonathan Taylor is there to soak it all up.
We'll see what Adrian does. Does he kind of look more like last year's Adrian? He's had a couple of weeks of practice, got the start against Purdue. Maybe he's healthier. I don't know. Nebraska did some good things a year ago. Again, like you say, different team. But they did some things spreading Wisconsin out. Can Nebraska's offense have more of an Indiana-type day than a Purdue-type showing? That'll be interesting for me to see. Rick, got a couple minutes left, man. What's your thoughts here on the college football playoff? And what do you think happens tonight? Does Ohio State stay number one?
You know, I actually think they probably don't. I think this committee told us last week that the one criteria that they value more than any other, quality wins. And LSU now has arguably the best win in the country. Minnesota, interestingly enough, probably has the second best win in the country. So I think LSU probably gets the nod this week over Ohio State. But at the end of the day, Chris, it doesn't really matter if they're 1-2. They were going to be sent to different sites anyway. At that point, it's just whether you're playing in Atlanta or whether you're playing out in Phoenix. So I don't think it makes a huge difference one way or the other. I think the more intriguing team inside the Big Ten to watch is Minnesota. How many slots do the Gophers jump up? They were 17. No team has ever made a 10-spot jump from one week to the next in the history of the College Football Playoff Committee ranking. So could Minnesota go all the way to 7 or even higher than that? I mean, you could certainly argue that without a loss and with that win, that they have a better resume than Oklahoma, that they have a better resume than Baylor, that they have a better resume than teams that were ahead of them. Georgia, I think, is probably still going to be ahead of them because the College Football Playoff Committee likes what Georgia has done from a win perspective. So I think for Minnesota, probably the most intriguing, and obviously how far does Penn State fall? And are they in a situation where it's basically win out or go home? I think they probably are.
When you look at the top four, LSU, Ohio State, Clemson will sneak in there. Does Georgia get in top four?
I don't know if Georgia gets in the top four. I mean, I think the top three are really easy to figure out, just whether LSU and Ohio State are 1 and 2 and Clemson's going to be 3. There have been a lot of folks out there prognosticating that Alabama is going to stay in the top four, which would be a mind blow to me, because you're basically giving credit not for your best win. Your best win is your best loss if you're Alabama. They have nothing else on the resume. And with what LSU has left, the chances of Alabama getting to the SEC championship game are almost non-existent, because LSU is going to be favored by 20 or 30 in their remaining three games. So I just don't really see a path to Alabama, and I know the committee is not supposed to view it that way, but they're humans. So to me, there's no reason to leave Alabama inside the top four, and then the argument becomes, who does deserve to be number four? I honestly truly think, and they're not going to be there, but I truly think that you can make a legitimate argument based on what the criteria is supposed to be for the College Football Playoff Committee that Minnesota should be number four in this week's rankings. They've won every game they've played, and they have a win over a team that was top four at the time, and it was a fairly dominant win. I know they had to come up with a pick, but they led the entire game, and they've led almost this entire Big Ten season. So to me, I think you can make an argument. I just don't think it's going to happen. I don't think the committee is going to be ready to be quite that gutsy.
Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet. Rick, we'll see you in Lincoln, bud. Thanks for a few.
My pleasure as always, man.
And we're back.
Fellas, I think we could
Listen to the radio.
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Few minutes, and College Football Hall of Famer, standout Husker, athletic director and coach at Wisconsin, Barry Alvarez with us. Coach, Nebraska-Wisconsin week, how are you?
I'm good. Good. Always look forward to coming into Lincoln and seeing some old friends and reminiscing a little bit.
You guys have come into Lincoln a lot. They've been some tight ball games. They've not been so tight of ball games. When you look at your Wisconsin squad this year, how do you think your kids have rebounded after the Illinois misstep?
You know, that was a game that was really surprising to me because we had played so clean to start the season, even our first game. We didn't beat ourselves. You know, very few penalties, very few turnovers. And that was a game where we probably had five or six mistakes on third down defensively, which allowed them to keep the ball. We missed a chip shot field goal. We turned the ball over the last two possessions we had. You know, that was very disappointing. I was really surprised how we played. The next week, you know, I thought we competed hard against Ohio State. That may be one of the better teams I've seen since I've been in the Big Ten. And I just thought we knew going into the Iowa game, we knew what type of game that was going to be. Surprised us the way the thing went down. You know, we anticipated a four-quarter game, very physical, and I thought our guys responded very well.
Barry Alvarez with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, I want to go back to Ohio State for a second, and you've seen a lot of really talented Big Ten teams. You've seen teams compete for a national championship out of the Big Ten. You've seen a team win a title out of the Big Ten, and you've been on the doorstep a couple of times yourself. And what sticks out to you so much about this Ohio State team? And you've also served on the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, so you've seen and you've decided. Where does Ohio State kind of stack up with what you've seen and what makes them so talented this year?
Well, there are no weaknesses on that team. The quarterback transfer from Georgia has really upgraded the quarterback position. He's big. I understand he runs under 4.4, throws it very well. You know, he can extend the play. They've got big-time receivers, a lot of speed, good running backs. Offensively, they're very talented. Defensively, you know, you've got to account for the one defensive end, Chase Young. They can play a press man all over the field. I don't see a weakness. They've got tremendous speed. They've recruited very well. They've got a very good scheme offensively where they're wide open. They're going to put points on you. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to score with them, and their defense is very it's very difficult to do that. As I said, it's one of the better teams I've seen in the Big Ten.
What's your take on the West? I mean, you guys are playing good football. Minnesota's unbeaten, landmark victory for Coach Fleck. Lovey's bowl eligible. And the Northwestern's not having a great year, but they won the West a year ago. What's your impression of the West here in 2019?
Yeah, I think the West surprised people. I think the West is deep, very competitive. You know, a lot of teams that can knock each other off. You know, I think Ohio State may be the most talented, mm-hmm. but on the West, I think we've got a number of teams that are very talented.
A few minutes here, Barry Alvarez with us, Hail Varsity Radio. When you look at Nebraska this year, lofty expectations and still working through some things, what sticks out about year two for Scott Frost and this Nebraska crew to you?
Yeah, I see improvement. You know, I was impressed a year ago with your quarterback, and you know, to be successful, you've got to have a good quarterback. That's a good place to start. I'm really impressed with him. Some explosive players. You know, Spielman. You know, from the time he showed up there, is a home run hitter, and you know, your one. I forget his name. The shorter back.
Robinson.
Yes, he's explosive. You know, I see a good team, very dangerous team, very competitive team.
Coach, you took over Wisconsin in 1990, and I was talking with a guy who loves you a lot, Mel Tucker, before the Colorado game, and I know he played for you, and he said to me that you said, we're heading to the Rose Bowl before you guys get out of here. You had a vision. And I said, well, did you believe it? And he's like, absolutely, I believed it. And lo and behold, you're in the Rose Bowl, and what you did is still talked about today. How did you approach your first head job and the build at Wisconsin?
Well, you know, I think you have to have a plan for success, have a vision on how you want to do things. It has to fit where you are. You know, I knew Wisconsin very well. I knew the type of players you could consistently recruit. I had a vision of the type of team we had to be to build a good foundation. And, you know, in Wisconsin, you're going to always be able to get linemen. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to get big kids here. And so it all starts with building a good offensive line and a physical defensive line, and building a team that doesn't beat itself, that's good fundamentally. And, you know, we develop players. Our high school football, you're not playing spring ball. You have to develop those guys, and you have to take a look and see where they are and project how they'll grow and how good they can get. You know, so you have to know athletically what type of athlete you're getting, all those things. And then, you know, I stole a lot of the things I learned at Nebraska with the walk-on program. Like Nebraska, we have one Division I school in the state. These kids want to play in bowl games. This school is very difficult to get into, and you know, so a lot of the guys want to come here instead of maybe going to a 1AA or MAC school. So we worked very hard on walk-ons, and they really gave us depth. And I don't think any Rose Bowl team, I think we've been to 6 Rose Bowls since I've been here, and every one of them has had walk-ons as captains. Hmm. So, you know, those are just some of the things that we did. We had a plan, we stuck to it, and we got everybody to touch the football program on the same page.
Coach, you've done a great job finding walk-ons, and through your guys' development and the kids' hard work as well, becoming stars beyond just contributors. I mean, they've been major players. You've touched on the captains. Tell me how you're able to evaluate a kid that you think can pop. And you've talked to me before about those walk-ons being the erasers, right? They allow you to make mistakes if you're not
sure.
You're
going to make mistakes in recruiting.
You are,
You're going to make – I went back and did a study on all 16 years, and I hit 50% on the kids that we signed. And so if you bring in 20 walk-ons and let's say 6 of them make it each mm-hmm. year, you know, that takes your percentage way up. And they're players, and they give you depth and allows you to practice well.
Yeah. What did you see in J.J. Watt that wowed you?
J.J. was a tight end coming out of high school. Brett Bielema didn't offer him. He went to, Central Michigan.
Yeah.
And then after a year, he called us and wanted a transfer. You know, so you don't turn him down. He was a good player, not sure what position. They came in, lined up at defensive line, and then all of a sudden started growing. And, you know, our weight program blew him up, and all of a sudden he's the best player in the country.
Well, one of the best in the NFL. Yeah. Did you watch Russell last night?
I did. He's ridiculous.
Isn't he?
He is absolutely ridiculous. Great kid. And I can remember a GM. We were playing in a championship game, and the GM before the game said, you know, guys like Russell can really have a great career in Canada. I said, Russell have a great career in the NFL. And he said, well, nobody that size has ever made it. I said, you watch film? I mean, no, nobody ever tips the ball. He had one tip all year. You know, he moves. He throws through lanes. He's accurate. He can extend plays forever. He can win with his feet, and that ball's always accurate. No, he's special. He really is.
He is so good on the move, and you saw him win it last night with that scramble, and he is ultra talented. Barry Alvarez with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, a thought here. You know the Nebraska program. You love the Nebraska program. And I don't know how much you pay attention to what's going on back here as far as the fan base, but folks want it now, and you as a Nebraska alum want them to do well, obviously, to a degree. But what is your thought or advice with just there's frustration here because it's not happening in year two?
You have to be patient. You have the right man in place. Scott Frost understands Nebraska. You have to understand Nebraska. You have to know the plan. You know, Coach Osborne had the plan. Coach Devaney established it. Coach Osborne took it to another level. Scott was there. You have the right man in place. Just be patient. He'll get that job done.
That's my feeling, just covering this program for a while, and Scott's anxious to get it done. I want you to put your college football playoff committee member hat back on if you can. We've talked about Ohio State. What do you think of Burrow and LSU?
I'm really happy for him. You know, I had the opportunity, they asked me to come down and speak at their clinic last year, and I had a chance to watch their spring ball, and Burrow came over and made a point to come over and visit with me. And of course, I knew his father when he was at Nebraska, and then when he was with, you know, he's with Frankie now still at Ohio U, and had a nice visit with him, but really impressed with him and watching him play, and he's taken that team to a different level. He became a leader on that team as soon as he got there. It was very impressive, and it's impressive to watch him play and how he competes and understands the system. And I really had the sense, and I told Coach Ogeron as I watched spring practice, you know, there aren't many places where you go in the spring and you look at the body, the people sitting in that meeting room that have a chance to win the national championship, but you have enough talent in here to win. It's about doing all the small things and having the right leadership, et cetera. And I've been impressed how they've developed.
He is incredible, and us flipping back and forth between your game and LSU, and it was cool to see Joe do his thing. Last thought: how often do you keep in touch with Coach Solich? I know he's working on that MAC win record.
Yeah, I talk to him occasionally. You know, we both get tied up.
Yeah,
so he gets focused pretty good on his season, and I do the same thing. But we stay in contact.
That's Barry Alvarez. Coach, we'll see you Saturday. Safe travels, and thanks for a few minutes again.
Okay, absolutely. Have a good day.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Good stuff from the Godfather. That is Barry Alvarez. He's enjoying his trip back to Lincoln later this weekend. Some tight ball games, some blowouts. We'll see what Saturday has in store. College football playoff unveiling week two. What happens? Got a question for you. Do you doubt Bama's credentials? Do they stay in at that number four spot?
I don't think so.
Is it more because people are fatigued by Bama, or they don't think they're that good?
It's that, and they've lost to the one quality opponent they've played this year.
Right, right. This is the test, right? What do you do on the old midterm? Let me ask you this: could Bama beat Georgia? Yes. Could Georgia beat Bama? Yes. Could Alabama lose to Oregon? I don't know. I think Oregon could score some points. Does Oregon shut down Alabama's offense? I mean, don't forget, man, Bama scored 41 on LSU. They scored enough to win the game. Bama did. LSU is great. I'm not doubting them at all. They got enough stops defensively and did enough offensively.
Well, that's what people have said about LSU for years, that they need an offense.
Well, I know, but they've got a quarterback. They've got the skill guys. They've got the lines of scrimmage. Okay. Does Minnesota have a chance against Alabama?
No.
Okay.
But at the same time.
Does Penn State?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't think Penn State does either.
I like what Pizzo said. The back four for Penn State, that's your Achilles heel.
But at the same time, I don't think they have a chance. But now I think Minnesota, they're 9-0. They deserve the chance to go prove themselves because they have done everything they can this point.
But they're, I mean, where does Minnesota come in? I think Minnesota comes in 10 or better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm off Oklahoma's wagon.
I'm as well.
Because Hurts, while I thought he was phenomenal, I love watching him play ball. He's stupid with the football. He is stupid with the football, throwing the football. And in the loss, two big-time turnovers. And then he had a couple of – he had one interception where he just needed to throw the ball away against Iowa State. And he threw a pick.
Mm.
So, I mean, Alabama, do they stay at 4? Paul Feinbaum says, well, hell, it's the Alabama eye test. Well, Alabama's defense isn't ready yet to be championship level. There's too many freshmen starting. They're good, but they're not great. Okay? So, Georgia, I know that loss. South Carolina just lost to Appalachian State, and Appalachian State's a good football team, but you get my point. You're not supposed to lose if you're South Carolina in the SEC after a Georgia win like that on the road.
I have a question for you because this is something that is rare, that we have a chance for two Big Ten teams to go into the Big Ten title game undefeated.
Mm-hmm. Your last time you had it was Iowa and Michigan State.
This year, 2015. Do you think if Minnesota plays Ohio State close, that the Big Ten could have two teams in
the
college football playoff?
I'm wrong. Nebraska beat Michigan State in 2015.
Yeah, State was 11-1 with the only loss to Nebraska. Nebraska,
right.
Is it possible? Because it happens with the SEC, but the SEC has that media bias that they're the greatest and the best.
Well, I mean, they're deep, but and you heard Coach Alvarez talk about the West, how good the West is. I think Penn State's going to have two losses. They'll get beat by Ohio State. Michigan's really they're going to ramp up and be a pretty darn good football team by the end of the year, but they'll be 10-2. And if Minnesota, here's what's got to happen. Minnesota's got to win out, and I'm not convinced that happens. I think they lose in Iowa City, okay? And I don't believe they make it through Wisconsin and Iowa.
No.
I just think they have not, they're good. They are good. They're like Rose Bowl good, okay? And give me a one-loss Minnesota team to the Rose Bowl to represent the Big Ten. I don't think you get two in. Because you're not going to – you can't take Penn State over Minnesota.
No.
And if you get two undefeated teams in the Big Ten, they're not going to give Fleck and Minnesota the nod over a second SEC team. And I don't think they should. I don't think whether it's Georgia or whether it's Alabama, both those teams are better than Minnesota. They just are.
And I think Minnesota can do it if – they either beat Wisconsin or Iowa convincingly. They need one convincing win because they don't have.
They can do more in a loss to make their case to me if they're within 3-7 of Ohio State.
Yeah. Which is what happened to Georgia and Alabama 2 years ago in the SEC title game.
Yeah. I mean, it was a 28-24 ball game.
Yeah.
And so I like Georgia. I think Bama's pretty good, and we're not going to get to see Georgia and Alabama because, God forbid, they ever play a crossover. Now, I mean,
well, the SEC doesn't like cannibalism.
Well, they're protective.
Yes.
The thing that I think is going to be interesting here is what happens with Georgia Auburn, and then you're going to get Georgia either Georgia LSU or you're going to get Georgia Alabama, but I don't see LSU stubbing their toe twice. I just don't.
If Georgia can make it to the SEC title game and beat LSU, SEC teams.
Then I think you got to take both of them, don't you?
I agree. And I think that's how Georgia gets in. I think they have to go win the SEC now.
And with Oregon, I mean, Oregon, you got a common opponent with the Auburn loss. Oregon could be undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see Utah and Oregon hook up in the Pac-12. I can't for the life of me take as much fun as Oregon is to watch. I don't think they stack up against anyone from the SEC. And I think Oregon's champion's probably better than the Big Ten's second place team. I mean, I think Penn State could hang and beat an Oregon. I think I'd like to see Michigan take on Oregon. I guess Minnesota's got a really cool win and an awesome story. I just don't know that they can hang. I'm still skeptical.
You know what this whole conversation...
I need to see them win in Iowa City after a big win.
This whole conversation just tells me that we need to expand the college football playoff.
I know we do.
I think six is right, and a lot of people think
let's give it some time. That way everybody can get paid again when it comes to renewing TV rights for 2025.
How do you feel about a six-team playoff, though?
I'm good with it.
I think six makes sense with the five Power 5 conference winners and then one at-large team that didn't win their conference. Mm-hmm.
That's fine with me.
That makes the most sense to me, and then you can give the top two seeds a bye.
And you need to just kind of put a gun in Notre Dame's mouth.
And say join a conference.
Join a conference.
And that's what it would take, I think.
Because the SEC's pretty easy to sift through, depending on whoever takes Florida State over. Because Miami's still drifting without a harbor. Same with Florida State. Mac Brown may get Carolina to an 8 or 9 win spot. Virginia Tech's not really rallied to be dangerous yet again under Fuentes. So right now it's just Clemson. And Clemson, to their credit, I mean, they'll play A&M. They have played some non-conference teams. And Clemson played Auburn and A&M in the same year, not long ago. Clemson's really talented and good. Who comes in at number four? It's going to be Alabama, and folks are going to freak. That's what happens, and I think LSU jumps Ohio State. It's all right. They're pretty much interchangeable.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time on a Tuesday. Good stuff. Barry Alvarez, Rick Pizzo, and how about Mitch Sherman? Tomorrow, Mike Babcock, Brad Edwards. We'll talk some college football playoff rankings with Brad. And how about Cam Taylor Britt? We'll sit down with Blackshirt Cam Taylor Britt, get his take as things lead up to Nebraska, Wisconsin this week. All right. Anxious to hear some thoughts on Ed Orgeron. And Ed Orgeron was asked at his media session about the comments in question. If you need a refresher, here they are. And this is pure gold, Jerry, although it shouldn't have been unleashed.
Do you understand that?
Yes, sir.
Roll Tide, what? F*** you!
Yeah!
So that was pretty crazy. And he was, you could translate that pretty good. So here is Ed Orgeron in his media session asked about, you know, coach, what do you have to say about your post-game comments?
The things that I say outside through media is those are the things that I want to get out. And if I wanted that to get out, I said that outside. But, you know, you get emotional. You talk to your team, it's your family, just like we all talk to our family. We talk around the dinner table, we say some things that's outside the family we don't say. And it was no means to hurt anybody or nothing like that. It was just a fiery moment, a very emotional moment with our team. That's all that was.
I buy it. Some things are not meant for public consumption, but I'm glad it happened. That's one of the quotes of the year.
Oh, that's one of my favorite quotes.
Do we have the full, like, about beating Bama's ass? He's not sorry about what he said. He's sorry it got out. It is cutthroat and competitive. Ed's done tours in Miami. He's done tours at SC. He was a head coach at Ole Miss. He's been the interim guy for about 40 places. He grew up on a hovercraft in the bayou. And he's got his dream job. He's not even making $4 million a year because he's giving him the old hometown Louisiana discount. He is the proudest Louisianan there is since Jim Croce.
But he's going to get a raise this offseason.
Yeah, he may. I mean, yes, it makes sense to give him a raise. But he would coach for, I mean, not quite for free, but you get my point. He's the happiest guy there is to be where he's at coaching.
You got
to
reward him. He's the perfect advertisement for the entire state of Louisiana.
Here's the thing.
That's what he is.
No, he is, but you can't piss him off. And if he goes 7-5 next year, run him out. See, the thing that is hurting Michigan State and killed Les Miles was his inability to get creative on offense. It was going to be I formation, and I get you had Leonard Fournette with a great offensive line, and you're going to run the football, and you're going to win 10, 11 games a year, even in that conference. But you didn't have an ability to throw the football. Look at what Nick Saban's done. If Nick Saban would run the football more, they probably could have beat LSU or kept the LSU offense off the field. But, I mean, there were some mistakes by Tua. He was great. He also hit Judy for 85 yards to make it at least an onside kick situation. Bama, with Sarkisian, doesn't stick with the run game long enough. Ed has a great quarterback and phenomenal skill guys. All right, playoff rankings will be coming out. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 4 on Hail Varsity. Thanks.